This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, a podcast that's pretty good. I'm not going to oversell it. I will let the episode speak for itself. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today following up on our John Keel episode in what I don't know if we're classifying as a two-parter, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're at
okay.
This point.
Nice. Yeah. And I will let you take it from there.
Okay, thanks. Great opener.
Don't oversell the opener, Chelsea.
So, we left off on Keel, and I think you may have noticed that we're clearly missing one of Keel's most renowned marks on the UFO community, at least from my perspective, that being the Mothman prophecies. I decided it needed its own episode or two, and I'm talking about an in-depth look at the book itself. I also wanted to take the time in this episode to pull out some of the major happenings in the book to talk about. So let's not waste time and dive right in. November of 1966, the people of Point Pleasant and the surrounding area in West Virginia, which is along the Ohio River, begin to experience strange things. And the events take place over a period of about 13 months and entails hundreds of documented witnesses and accounts, Mothman being only one of them. It's hard to track down an official first encounter. They differ, but I'm going to go with this one. It's a National Guardsman on duty at the Point Pleasant 1092nd Engineer Battalion headquarters. He was on the base when he saw an impossibly large creature perched high in a tree on a fence above the base. It was so big he thought it was a man, and he sat staring at it for a little bit and couldn't make sense of it. He thinks it must be a bird, but it's too big, and it would have been the largest bird he'd ever seen in his life. He goes to get someone else to come take a look, and by the time he comes back, it's gone.
I was gonna say, like, an ostrich is larger than a human, but I guess he's never technically seen one, and it would still be odd to see an ostrich perched on top of that. I don't think that perch on top is something that you hear from ostriches that often.
Yeah, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say, like, an ostrich is pretty unique looking. So I would think that if you saw an ostrich, it would be, I mean, if I saw the shadow of an ostrich, that would be freaky. I mean, I don't like birds, so it's like one of my worst nightmares. So I wouldn't like seeing it, but I would feel like I'd be like it was in the shape of an ostrich because it just had like one super long neck with a bulb on the top and a fat body. The next day, after this sighting, a man you may have heard of before but may not be able to immediately identify, named Woodrow Derenberger, was driving down the highway and had an encounter with a little entity that called itself Colt.
Ah, yes. I know who we're talking about now.
Yeah. So I just wanted to tell you that that's where that happened in conjunction in the timeline. Second encounter of the Mothman comes November 16, 1966, and I'm going to take this one right from the Point Pleasant Register. Quote, two Point Pleasant couples said today they encountered a man-sized bird-like creature in the TNT area about midnight last night. Quote, within a quote, I guess, because I'm quoting the article, it was a bird or something. It definitely wasn't a flying saucer, end quote. Sheriff's deputies and city police went to the scene about 2 o'clock in the morning, but were unable to spot anything. But the two young men telling their story this morning were dead serious and asserted they hadn't been drinking. Steve Millett of 3305 Jackson Avenue. I love that they put their address in there. And Roger Scarberry,
I guess,
of 809. Yeah.
This is before they came out with the term doxing, isn't it?
Yeah. It would explain a lot of how much attention these people got after.
Yeah. People you could just walk up to them and find
and stuff like that. Yeah. And Roger Scarberry of 809 30th Street described the thing as being 6 or 7 feet tall, having a wingspan of 10 feet and red eyes about 2 inches in diameter and 6 inches apart. It was like a man with wings, Millett said. Oh, that was a quote. Requote. It wasn't like anything you'd see on TV or in a monster movie, end quote. The men and their wives were in Scarberry's car between 11:30 p.m. and midnight when they spotted the creature near the old power plant adjacent to the National Guard Armory buildings. Creature was seen standing on 3 occasions and was described as being extremely fast. In brackets, it flew about 100 miles an hour, in brackets, in flight, but was a clumsy runner. That's weird. What?
I do think it tripped.
Yeah, it must have. Deputy Millard Halstead said that he had seen dust in the vicinity of a coal field, but it could have been caused by a bird, he said. I'm a hard guy to scare, Scarberry said, but last night I was for getting out of there, end quote. They did just that, but the thing followed them. They said it was hovering the car, apparently gliding, until they reached the National Guard Armory on Route 62. Quote, we went downtown, turned around, and went back, and there it is again, Millett said. It seemed to be waiting on us. He said the light gray like creature then scurried through a field. It had flown across the top of the car. It apparently is afraid of light, Millett reasoned, and maybe it thought it was scaring us off. The young men said they saw the creature's eyes, which glowed red only when their lights shone on it, and it seemed to want to get away from the lights. They said it looked like a man with wings, but that the head was not an outstanding characteristic.
Chelsea, is this a good point to bring up just a statement that they have all described it as bird-like?
Yeah.
Like, they're all man-like birds, or bird-like men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not one person has said, like, insect-like.
No.
Okay.
No, because I think most people compare it to they see a man, but then it spreads its wings and take off. Just generally. I don't think I've ever heard anyone compare it to an insect.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking...
It's always man-shaped, and then there's wings.
Yeah, and bird wings.
Yeah, like bat wings.
And what year are we talking about here?
This would be 1966.
Okay, this is right around the time that the comic book character Birdman came out. He was in 67.
They name it after... I can't remember. You would think I would have it in this episode, but it's not in. It's a superhero that they name it after.
Mothman?
Like a Max... it's like a mix between Batman and something else they name it after. It's actually somebody that works at one of the newspapers that names it Mothman. But yeah, everybody says man-shaped, and then it'll just take off, and it spreads its wings. They said it looked like, quote, man with wings, but that the head was not an outstanding characteristic. Both were slightly paled and tired from lack of sleep during the night following their harrowing experience. They speculated that the thing was living in the vacant power plant, possibly in one of the huge boilers. Quote, there are pigeons in all the other buildings, end quote, Millett said. Requote, but not in that one. End quote. If I had seen it while by myself, I wouldn't have said anything, Scarberry commented. But there were 4 of us who saw it. They said it didn't resemble a bat in any way, but maybe what you would visualize as an angel. The last time they saw it, at the gate of the C.C. Lewis Farm on Route 62. They heard a sound like wings flapping, and they said the bird rose straight up like a helicopter. This doesn't have an explanation to it, Millett said. It was an animal, but nothing like I've seen before. Are they going back to look for the creature? Yes, Millett said. This afternoon and again tonight. Today, Scarberry said, but tonight I don't know. So that'll set the scene for you about kind of what's going on in Point Pleasant at the time. We actually haven't talked about this yet. I love the Mothman. It has the Mothman.
I don't think you like the Mothman.
Totally different guy. Yeah. But We've never covered this Mothman before. I love Mothman, and I've done the Illinois Mothman because I hadn't heard of him. This guy's the famous one, the original one coming out of Point Pleasant. That's the background.
Well, I think it's very good of us to get to it within the first 4 years of the podcast. Hmm? Or are we in year 5?
Yeah, it could come immediately. Oh.
No, all the big ones you guys want, we're alluding to and will come at some point.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of sets the scene for you for what's going on. Gray Barker writes the first book on the Mothman, and it's called The Silver Bridge. He writes it about the goings-on in West Virginia, and he writes it in 1970, which is 5 years prior to the Mothman prophecies coming out in 1975. I read that one too. Keel's Mothman prophecies accounts of his investigation into the alleged sightings of a large winged creature known as the Mothman in the vicinity of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, during 1966 and 1967. It combines these accounts with his series about UFOs and various supernatural phenomena, ultimately connecting them to the collapse of the Silver Bridge across the Ohio River, December 15, 1967. Official investigations in 1971 determined the bridge collapse was caused by stress corrosion cracking in an eye bar in a suspension chain.
Okay, so the official response was not moth people.
No.
Okay.
It was never. Nope. So I bought this book years and years ago, and I was never able to get very far through it. I got a subscription to Audible and thought, I've heard so many great things about this book. Everything I've heard has been that it's a great book. I thought maybe listening would be better. I don't think that it necessarily was. I got through it. The guy said enthusiast funny. It came up way more than you would think in this book. It's a it's a well-used word in the book. He calls them enthusiasts.
Huh. And sorry, whom are the enthusiasts?
UFO enthusiasts.
Oh, okay.
He uses the word a lot. That's my review of the Audible, by the way.
Not bad. Uses the word.
Now that I've had time to actually process what I read and take in a great amount of media and other books and TV show, well, media includes all of those, about the Mothman prophecies, I think I had a hard time with getting into it, as well as wrapping my head around the Audible book, because it wasn't necessarily what I was expecting, especially after seeing the movie, which I'll talk about in a second, which is right now.
So Richard Gere doesn't come up in the book at all, I take it?
No.
Or what's his name? The guy from Shameless.
What the hell's that guy?
He's the guy who dies.
Oh, did you just spoil Shameless for me?
No, he dies in Mothman Prophecy.
Oh, that's Will Patton.
Yeah, the guy in Fargo. Right? Who's the guy in Fargo?
I don't think it's Will Patton.
Let me look his name.
Will Patton was just in the TV show I really liked, Outer Range.
It is.
I don't think it's Will Patton.
It's William H. Macy.
The Mothman Prophecies book is not one complete story. It's not an easy linear story.
Is William H. Macy?
Such as the movie had me expecting.
Is William H. Macy not in Mothman Prophecies? Do I have him confused with somebody?
No, you're thinking of the wrong guy.
Yeah, I am.
Now that you say that, Google Will Patton.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, I definitely have the wrong guy. He was in Remember the Titans.
Yes, he is. I've never seen Shameless, though, so I had no idea.
Yeah.
I disagreed with you. So, with all that being said, I wouldn't mind reading it again now, knowing what I know, and taking it all in again. And this time I would read it. Not that I haven't kind of read it based on my notes through Audible. The book was widely popularized as the basis of a 2002 movie called The Mothman Prophecies, which stars Richard Gere, Will Patton, like we were just talking about.
Not Macy.
That's how I knew his name so quick. Nope, not him. He wasn't in Fargo. Laura Linney and Alan Bates. And I don't know why everybody keeps not mentioning Deborah Messing, but she's in it too. Only briefly, though. Maybe that's why.
Is she the one who has the dream?
She's the one that dies in the beginning.
Oh,
it's from
right.
2002. I'm not ruining anything.
Well, you can't ruin the first 5 minutes of a movie.
Yeah.
Straight up. That came out in 2002.
The whole movie. So, Gere and Bates played two parts in Keel's personality. Bates' character is named Leek, which is Keel spelled backwards. And Gere's newspaper journalist character is called John Klein, also a play on Keel's name. Taylor.
Yes.
You've seen the movie.
Yeah, it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah. You know, now that you mention it, it is. What do you think of it?
From what I remember, it was pretty good.
Based on your really good memory of it.
Yeah, my William H. Macy was fantastic in it. It's a shame he had to die. I don't really know what to tell you. Like, Ingrid Cole is probably a little overrepresented for what he actually had as a relationship in the whole thing. But overall, not a bad movie. Richard Gere in his prime, so...
I will say that it was my first introduction to the Mothman.
Yeah, me too.
So,
we grew up together.
Yes. We were both introduced to Mothman through the Mothman Prophecies movie. Reading the Mothman Prophecies and having started out being very familiar, 2002, so it came out when I was like going into high school, and reading the book so far after it came out, after being a huge fan of Mothman, I was actually impressed that most major things in the book are covered in the movie. Not necessarily how they're covered in the book, but the first story that I told you, well, the third story that I told you in the beginning is in the movie. A lot of things do make it into the movie, and I will say the movie is much more cohesive than the book is. I was really impressed because most everything that's in the movie is in the book. They just took key points, made it into, you know, they made it Hollywood.
A linear story that they can actually sell to the public, yeah.
Exactly. That being said, there's like Ingrid Cole isn't the same, but interactions that Will Patton has with Ingrid Cole, while they weren't necessarily interactions that Woodrow Derenberger actually have with Ingrid Cole, they are themes that are in the book. And you'll see through some of the things that I go through in these episodes that as well. You're going to see some things, if you can remember the movie, come up in this that are just presented a little differently. Keel also said that he was pleased with director Mark Ellington's interpretation of the book. Quote, they got a lot of stuff in the book into the movie, but with slight variations. I have no real complaints about it. It's Hollywood and it's done well. That's my feeling about it. I actually would give a similar review. They did do a good job and a lot of the stories did make it in the movie, end quote. Like I said, I agree. I have to say it's probably one of the best book to movie renditions. I do have some thoughts on the book. I read a synopsis of the book above to you. I mean, previously throughout, if you could rewind a little bit, I read it. And I have to honestly say, I would not say, it is an accurate one, but it's not. I would summarize the book as being more about general high strangeness than specifically the Mothman. And while the Moth person does come up, I found there to be much more information on the Men in Black, UFO encounters, and contactees. Or random thoughts and encounters where I think Keel is just trying to work out what's going on. And he's trying to tie all the weird information he's getting together. And to that effect, I believe that's why they end up bringing the bridge into the storyline and tying it to Mothman, because it gives the Mothman a purpose and a closure, which is much more comfortable to the human brain for there to have been a purpose behind the sightings and what happened.
So in the book, is there less of a connection?
No, there's the same connection.
Oh, okay.
They do tie it together with things. I don't really get into it. But like I said, I think it's just much more of a comfortable thing for people's brains to wrap their head around a tragedy as well as the really super weird things that were going on.
Okay.
So yeah, the book jumps around a lot. He brings in other people's work and sightings from around the world. I think, like I said, in an attempt to make sense of what's going on, I'm not 100% sure where he was getting some of his information from that he brings into the book, because there was a large amount of information taken from elsewhere that wasn't noted. A lot of the book is secondhand info. That being said, he does have a lot of witness accounts too that he works on. And Gray Barker also pulls from John Keel's witnesses that he uses in his Silver Bridge book. To be honest, I don't know that I have heard of any other experiences of such a large amount of centralized weirdness going on, such as what is put together in this book that is happening to an entire region, other than to say Skinwalker Ranch.
That's not quite as populated.
Yeah, it's more localized in Skinwalker Ranch and West Virginia, I would say. What Kiel's reporting on is less weird, but still like weirder in a wider area covered. So I would compare them kind of the same. And I hear a lot of comparisons to the two works in all my stuff that I've been taking in. This has been a long time coming, and all I've been doing is like living and breathing the Mothman prophecies and the Mothman. Something that wasn't in the book that I found out from the Coast to Coast AM episode with Art Bell that John Keel was on. He did like a little interview prior to the Mothman prophecies coming out. It was like the same day he did the interview that it came out. And he told Art Bell.
Way back in the day. Wow.
Yeah. So he tells Art Bell that what brought Keel to West Virginia in the first place was to investigate Thomas, the winged cat. So that's a fun tidbit for you. That's not in the book. That's why.
Oh man,
is that
a future episode?
Yes. Oh my god. We could do like Bat Boy, Thomas the winged cat. Like, you know those, what are they called? Like,
oh, I don't know, but they were the Weekly World News stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we could do an episode on those guys. A major thing that stuck out to me is that witness statements and general high strangeness happenings, Keel tells more like a story than an actual witness account. What people are wearing, the color of their skin, how good looking an individual was, inner monologues of people that you wouldn't possibly think he could know or that they would divulge to him.
Do they all think he's really attractive and cool?
Yeah. He thought, man, Keel's so cool and good looking. Details that are totally irrelevant to eyewitness encounter testimonies. And on that thought, there were many unnecessary sexual undertones. It made me uncomfortable listening to it because you don't really get that in books anymore unless you're listening to like one of those, you know, spicy books, which I don't listen to. I assume
which John Keel's not writing.
Yeah, no. This is the Mothman prophecies. He definitely writes it to be like a story, but it's not. It has true witness accounts in it and stuff like that. So that was also hard for me to wrap my head around. That being said, this book definitely shows its age, not only in language, but also the way that the information is presented. And you can tell Keel is trying to connect the dots where he should have just let them not be connected because, you know, you're trying to connect and make a connection. It was just kind of scrambled. That being said, the information is mostly still relevant in the field. Again, look at Skinwalker Ranch. People haven't been able to connect stuff like this. There's no unifying theory. That sets you up for the book. Now I have the Mothman out of the way. I want to get into some of the various other themes that Keel delves into in his book. So first off, do you have any questions about the book? General questions.
So, is it written in like a very misogynist way?
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting from Keel here. I guess, is there chapters? Or is it just like stream of consciousness?
So there's chapters, and then the chapters are divided into parts. Huh. So this is why I had to. It took me a good, you know, I read this over Thanksgiving, which the timeline's not going to make sense for this coming out when it does. I read it over Thanksgiving. I feel like I've only just now, like within the last month, kind of put it together in my head where I want to read it again because I was expecting something so different. So it took me a while to figure it out in my head. But now I do think it's a good book. There's lots of cool stuff in it. There's lots of different encounters. I love the high strangeness components to it. But yeah, some of the observations in it didn't age well. And it's interesting to hear, just like, you know, you watch old TV shows and it's like, kids today think it's weird that they don't have cell phones and stuff like that.
I know, it's actually kind of funny like if you watch shows from like mid to late 2000s, they're grasping with that idea that they actually have to write about people always constantly having cell phones. And like a trope of TV shows for the longest time was like, oh, they can't find each other or somebody's missing, so they have to find ways to write around people just very easily being able to get out of that situation.
Yeah. So kind of like that.
But very different. But different. Yes.
Yeah. So first up, we're going to talk about the Men in Black. Kiel actually invented the term Men in Black in an article for the Men's Adventure magazine, Saga, published 1967.
I love those Men's Adventure magazines. There are... Which, yes, we talked about in the first half, but...
Weird, right? That yeah. Kiel comes up in it. If I had to rename this book anything, it would be Men in Black. Because it's such a strong theme throughout the book. I was left feeling sometimes that the people he was referring to sometimes might not have been men in black based on the descriptions given. He develops a really complicated relationship with the men in black throughout the book, which we'll kind of discover.
Is that the sexual undertones?
It might be.
That he's coming to terms that he's, that's why he's pursuing actually, the men in black.
There are some sexual undertones that come up with the men
okay,
in black.
That's yes. good to know.
Heal says, referring to the men in black, quote, "There were a few that almost pulled off their capers without drawing attention to themselves. But in nearly every case, there is always some small error, some slip of dress or behavior, which the witnesses were usually willing to overlook, but which stood out like signal flares to me," end quote. That being said, he does present more information than I think I've ever heard or seen on the Men in Black, which is interesting and a little bit creepy, including that they drink Jello eating it with a spoon. Yep. That they drove old, out-of-date, pristine cars. The dress appeared to include everything brand new, shoes, pants, wallets, even walking through mud with no mud appearing on brand new shoes. Clothing out of fashion or would come into fashion years later. They used very old slang such as 23 Skidoo or Hubba Hubba. They would claim to be military with no military knowledge.
I'd be very curious what the military knowledge was. If it's like they saw a gun and it's like, what's that?
Yeah, it okay. was actually. No, don't call me on anything because I'm not going to be able to think of a single example if you do that.
I really like that idea, though. I'm from the military. What's that?
Come up often in conjunction with people who had witnessed a UFO or inhabitants, if asked, and would show up on the doorstep of contactees who had not yet revealed their encounter with anyone. Thus, the suspicious nature. They offered contactees pills. Some had wires sticking out of their pant legs. I do have the story. I think it's too long of a story to read right now.
When you say offer pills, is it literally just here, have some pills?
Yeah, so they had gone to the house of, I knew this was going to come up.
Okay.
But I didn't prepare for it. They had gone to the house of a contactee and offered her a pill. They gave her two pills, actually, and they said, take one now. And then take one in precisely however many hours later. She did take the pill. And then she ended up telling it must have been Kiel because it made it into the book and they had it tested. And it was something ordinary.
Like
I wish I could tell you right
aspirin.
Now. Something like that, yeah. Still super strange. Some had wires sticking out of their pant legs. In this story, they show up at the house of a contactee. And this man is looking very strange. It's always something that's just out of the ordinary. Very well dressed, like bulgy eyes. And this guy says that he needs to come into their house because somebody had passed away in their family. And they just wanted to verify that he was actually the person of the loved one that had died in another state. So he needs to come in for precisely 40 minutes and ask them questions. So he goes in and he's asking the contactee questions that are very personal about like any identifying marks on his body and stuff like that, where he went to school, very personal stuff. The wife asks him if he needs a glass of water, if he'd like some coffee or anything like that. And he says he'll take a glass of water, but that he would take it in 10 minutes. It was a very precise amount of time. So in that time, he keeps talking and he is getting more flush and flush and uncomfortable as he continues talking. At that 10 minutes is up, he says, I'll take that glass of water now. He takes a pill to which all the symptoms appear to be relieved, and he continues on, and right at the 45 minute mark that he had said, or 40 minutes, whatever it is, he gets up and leaves. And they are all talking at the end about how weird the encounter was. And they had all noticed that he had wires sticking out of his pant leg that they talk about after. And then they look out the window when he leaves and he's gone. No car was ever in the driveway or anything, and the guy just disappears. So anyhow, they get a call weeks later being like, yeah, he wasn't the guy. Wrong guy. Kiel believed he was being watched closely by the men in black, and at one point Kiel stops making appointments and plans, just because it seemed like people would be knowing about plans and meetings that he had. Random contactees, when he was interviewing them, would comment on meetings that he would have in the future and stuff like that, which he thought was very weird. So he ends up stopping planning his life, and he just does everything on a whim, and he just starts like stopping by previous contactees' houses. He'll just go about his day, drive past and be like, this guy's a contactee, and stop by, because he wanted to get out of this where people would be able to know about what's going on, because he's keeping appointments and stuff like that. Once he did that in a bid to reclaim some of his privacy, Kiel says they were always still a step ahead of him, even when he didn't know himself what he was doing, what hotel he was staying at, where he was going in the day and stuff like that. Contactees would receive phone calls from Kiel's secretary that contactees would relay their experience to about their encounter, and Kiel did not have a secretary. He would show up to interview the contactee and he'd be like, what secretary? That's what he talks about as just a brief rundown of Men in Black encounters in the book.
Yeah, that's enough that you wonder why he decided to just go with Mothman as the title of the book.
Yeah, I wondered that too. It's pretty huge in the book. There's a lot going on with the Men in Black, and it evolves as it goes on. He has a very complicated relationship with the Men in Black. Now I'm going to move on to Indrid Cold and the Grinning Men. We have done a whole episode on Indrid Cold, and to my dismay, I've left some stuff out. So I get a second chance. Lucky me. And in preparation for this episode, I told you I took in a lot of Mothman media. I read Woodrow Derenberger's book, Visitors to Lanulos, which is the story of Woodrow and his contact with Indrid Cold. He did go on to visit the planet Cold was from, named Lanulos, in case you needed that spelled out. I don't know that I talked about that in the
Indrid
Cold episode. No. So he's from Lanulos, and Derenberger actually goes to Lanulos. So Woodrow and Cold contact each other. Well, Cold contacts Derenberger primarily through telepathy. Quote, Woodrow would get a tingling sensation in his forehead and then receive thoughts from Cold into his mind that would explain different things, such as what Lanulos was like and that the people there lived to be 125 to 175 Earth years. And then upon completion of the conversation, I guess you could call it, Cold withdrawals from Woodrow's brain, I guess. And he describes it being very painful, like sharp pains in his temple. And Cold always says to prepare for it because it's going to be painful, end quote. No, that wasn't a quote. The quote ended before I commented on it.
Not the issues with quoting.
Yeah.
I've never heard it described as like painful telepathy.
Yeah, it had to have been a little bit more than telepathy at that point, I think. Woodrow and those around him also had experiences with the Men in Black. Salesman went door to door around the small town. He's actually from just outside of Point Pleasant. And salesmen are in around that town selling different things at each door. Like one, it would be Bibles, the next door would be vacuums. And they would be asking about Woodrow and the validity of his alleged account. They were asking about him in the end, I guess. And they're just being super weird. Those Men in Black are weird. Another interesting thing about Indrid Cold is that there are corroborating stories Not only did someone witness Darren Berger pull to the side of the highway speaking with someone the night that he met Indrid Cold, on the same night as Darren Berger's experience, we have this one that I'm going to read right from the book, and I'm going to open it up, turn the light on because I'm too old to not have the light on to read this. On November 2nd, 19th, do you hear that? That's the book.
Good work. That's how you know it's true.
Yeah. On November 2nd, 1966, he said, he and another workman, this is just telling the story here. I don't know. Let's just say he doesn't want to give his name at this point because I don't know who it is. He and another workman were driving home to Point Pleasant from their job near Marietta, Ohio on Interstate 77. As they neared Parkersburg, West Virginia, an elongated object appeared low in the sky and descended directly in front of them. They stopped their car and a man emerged from the object and walked over to them. He looked like a normal man and was grinning broadly. He wore a black coat and kept his arms folded with his hands out of sight under his armpits. That's such a weird thing to do. The witness rolled his windows down and there was a brief conversation. The stranger asked the pair who they were, where they were from, where they were going, and what time it was. Then he strolled back to the dark cylinder and it rose quickly into the chill, drizzling sky. The two men had a strong emotional reaction to the seemingly pointless encounter. They debated whether they should tell anybody, deciding against it. But the Point Pleasant resident found himself suffering from insomnia. And when he finally slept, he had strange nightmares. He started to hit the bottle, something very unusual for him. Mrs. Heyer, we're going to talk about her in the next episode, listened to his story, nonplussed, and made a few notes. A day or so later, the man's son called on her and asked her not to print the story. Several weeks later, she repeated the story to me and we called the man on her office phone. He verified the details and then said, quote, "Look, don't use my name. I don't want to get involved in this thing. That scientist fella told me." What scientist fella? That's Keel. He's asking, what scientist? And then the guy continues, "A couple of weeks after this thing happened, a scientist from Ohio came to see us. He told us it would be better if we forgot the whole thing." And Keel says, "How did he hear about it? How did he find you?" And the guy says, "Damned if I know." And Keel says, "Did he identify himself?" And he continues, "Sure, but I can't remember his name, but he seemed to know what he was talking about." Keel goes on, this is just his thoughts now. "I couldn't get much else out of him. I would have ignored the whole story except for one jarring fact. The same thing had happened the same night on the same road to another West Virginian." Unlike the two Point Pleasant residents, he had gone to the police with the story. A press conference was held and he was catapulted into the never-never land of the UFO contactees, the center of one of the biggest UFO stories in 1966. And that's Woodrow Darren Berger with Indrid Cold. So, you think that's weird enough. That was the same night as Darren Berger meets Indrid Cold. There's more. A young college student from Adelphi, Maryland, called Tom in the book. He was driving home and sees a large object in the road, specifically a bone-white reflective object like an egg standing on four legs. He pulls up to the object and he can make out two figures standing next to the thing, and it terrified him. There's another word there that I spelled wrong and I can't make it out. A man walks up to his car grinning. He was about 5'10", wore light blue coveralls, thick-soled boots, and had a ruddy or suntan complexion with large eyes, like thyroid eyes, he says. And the grin remained fixed the whole interaction.
I've never heard the term thyroid eyes.
Thyroid eyes are bulging eyes.
Okay.
This man tells Tom his name is Vadik and asks him random questions about where he's from, where he's going. Whatever. Valdig says to Tom, "I'll see you in time," and pieces the fuck out. Vadig makes more appearances to Tom throughout some amount of time and is actually taken to Vadig's planet, wait for it, Lanulos. Tom shares this with his college roommates and gets a hard time about it. And it wasn't until they were all watching... This is a much longer story in the book, by the way. It wasn't until they were all watching TV together and happened to come across an interview of Woodrow Darren Berger on the TV where he's speaking about Indrid Cold and Lanulos. And all four were flabbergasted to hear Woody describe the experiences that were identical to Tom's. Isn't that weird?
That is weird. This is the first time I've ever heard of Lanulos. And the fact that two people have the same story is interesting, I will say.
So what are you more blown away by, Lanulos, than that you never heard of it before? Or the corroborating evidence?
I think Lanulos, just the fact that it's like so out there. Like, we've heard of tons of planets that have been brought up as like things aliens say they're from there, and even places that people get taken. But like,
yeah,
Lanulos for the first time.
Yeah, Kiel does go on to say that he wouldn't have put that much stock in Woodrow Derenberger's encounter with Indrid Cold, and even continuing, because his contact with Indrid Cold does differ from other contactee encounters that he's having in the book. So he said, based on that, he wasn't putting much stock on it, except that it's so corroborated. Not only people seeing Derenberger parked on the highway speaking to Indrid Cold, but there's two more encounters with Grinning Men that happen. One is with the same exact planet. And the other is another Grinning Man that happens the same exact night. Like, that's more than a coincidence to me. Which I would agree, Indrid Cold, that one's a little bit out there as far as believable contactee reports. But again, at the time, this is not something that was following sci-fi movies and stuff like that. It would have been out there to even fabricate. Mm-hmm. So the Grinning Man, as you may gather from what I just said, are apparently a phenomenon of contacts with extraterrestrials that differ from Indrid Cold, perhaps. I know when I did the Indrid Cold episode, there were a couple more, but it wasn't anything crazy. Kiel says it's a little bit more than that, and he's talking to a witness here. Quote, "One night when I was walking home to my apartment, I became aware of a man following me. When I looked at him, he stopped and grinned at me, but there was an air of evil about him. I can't pinpoint it exactly," end quote. Kiel responds, quote, "Was he possibly some kind of sex deviant?"
End good quote. Question.
See, there's
very, very unnecessary question.
Weird sexual comment I told you about. Yeah. Quote, "No, I don't think so. He was short and sly and wore a black coat and black trousers. His face was dark and foreign looking. I don't know why, but the evil grin is burned into my memory," end quote. Kiel goes on to say that the foolishly grinning man is a staple item of psychic lore. Black suited, with a dark complexion and craggy foreign face, he has been described to me in many places and by many people. He didn't provide any stories in the book other than, you know, those three about the Grinning Man, but he kind of sums it up there, saying he sees it over and over again. I mean, I don't look in all places, so there has to be more out there? Question mark. Because when I looked it up with Indrid Cold, I didn't get a whole lot more stories, but there was quite a few in this one. So we're moving on from Indrid Cold now to contactees. Quote, "When you enter the unreal," this is Kiel, "when you enter the unreal world of contactees, precision, prophecies, and mysterious invasion of your privacy become commonplace. Contactees seem to develop heightened perceptions, ESP, and prognition."
Is that, I'm just wondering if that's why he's able to glean what people are thinking throughout the book, is he's getting it like secondhand from all these people. Okay.
Yes. It must be. "The changes occur almost overnight. In their meetings with the entities, they are served up platters of propaganda along with rumors and nonsense, which they accept and repeat as fact. Many of the choice tidbits of UFO lore were put into circulation by contactees who placed their complete trust in their contactors. Entities spun wild tales about crashed saucers being confiscated by the US Air Force, farmers shooting and wounding spacemen, and so forth. Contactees repeated the stories to wild-eyed UFO enthusiasts, and so they spread in ever-widening circles until they appeared in articles and books. Derenberger never claimed psychic powers. He said he received telepathic messages from Cold, giving him specific information. Uri Geller claimed that his psychic abilities came from space intelligences. He became world famous after his alleged contact with a flying saucer on a desert in the Middle East. He has been tested by armies of scientists and parapsychologists."
Yeah, we've talked about him before.
Yeah, and he was a part of something
else. Yeah, I'm trying to think too. It was an army program. It was
remote viewing.
Yes, remote viewing. Thank you. I was going to say it's adjacent to Men Who Stare at Goats, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I always have to translate Men Who Stare at Goats into remote viewing. Usually contactee experiences follow certain patterns which they are not even aware of at the time. A long series of seemingly unrelated events occur prior to the first overt contact. These events can begin in childhood and span many years. Then too, most contactees have active or latent psychic abilities before contact. People who see ghosts or religious apparitions have the same patterns of the UFO contactees. And in fact, the apparitions described in religious miracles usually share the same physical characteristics as our UFO entities. That is, long fingers, dusky complexions, and pointed fingers. Those are just, there's many contacts within this book. He basically, the whole book is just Men in Black and contactees, to be honest. And the Mothman comes up a couple of times. Well, it's more than a couple of times.
Hey, and there's
a
Mothman,
but you get what I'm
yeah.
trying to say. I just thought that was an interesting thought that he was getting out about contactees. Every so often you see him have a glimpse at what he's trying to put together, and it's pretty good. I do like that he's making the connection between religious apparitions and UFO contactees in that last little bit there. But that's where I'm going to leave this episode on today. And then I'm going to leave it for a surprise on just what we're going to be talking about in relation to the Mothman prophecies next week. What do you think so far?
There's actually more to it than I was expecting. I was kind of expecting it to be more bunk than it's turned out.
Well, I think we were both surprised with the Kiel episode.
Yes, just with that background and the fact that from what I've heard, yeah, he's not the best investigator.
No, and you can tell, I have my critiques in the next episode, spoiler alert. But aside from the way he tells his stories, and the way he does kind of lead his witnesses, which, again, next episode, it's really entertaining. He has some good stuff in there, and I can't fault him for wanting to make it a good read, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
He was just generally a good writer before this. He wasn't a UFO investigator.
He was a propagandist.
So you could see why he would bring something like that into this. It does make it more enjoyable. To me, it sticks out like a sore thumb, and you can kind of read around it. But still an enjoyable book. I like the topic. I love the stuff he's talking about. So I don't know what to say about it in the end. And plus, these people are all contactees and have had their experiences. So it's not like he was making it up. He was just, you know, adding his Kiel flair to it.
Well, and you got to think, if he's trying to draft a narrative into a linear story, well, not necessarily a linear, but a story nonetheless, he's not going to necessarily... I don't know, this might be, I didn't read it, but I could be completely off base. But he's not going to ask as tough of questions as he might need to actually see if it's a legit case, if it's aligning with what he already has.
See, I don't, he doesn't.
I don't know, because I didn't read it, so you'll have to.
Yeah, but the thing with that is he doesn't know what he has.
That's fair, but like and for I the guess... most part, when we're looking at like cryptids and whatnot, they're all like one-off sightings. They're not things that really go on for that long, but his stories seem to.
Yeah, that's something I couldn't make heads or tails of with the Mothman prophecy. There's nothing else like this. There's nothing else where, I mean, yeah, you get UFO flaps and stuff like that, but other, like I said, Skinwalker Ranch, there's nothing else where you get such a concentrated area for a finite amount of time where just some really weird stuff is going on. And it's not happening every day all the time. But in the end, when you get all these people coming forward and sharing their experiences and people they're investigating in, it adds up to something weird happening, right? Like when they're investigating it. But where else can you say something like that happened?
No, exactly. And that's why
like
I'm wondering.
You got Mothman, UFOs, you got Men in Black. Like, where else?
It's really sometimes.
Please.
Sometimes.
Give us a comment.
Sometimes in our creature features at Halloween, there are kind of things that go on for a few sightings over like a week or two period.
Yeah, but please, like, leave us a comment if there was anything where there was a prolonged presence of Men in Black, a prolonged presence of, you know, something like the Mothman. Doesn't have to be Mothman, just something that can't be explained that happens over like the period of a year. Please. Let us know. I would be so interested in that. And it makes me suspicious as to, And it doesn't seem, I mean, it does happen sporadically still in West Virginia with the Mothman sightings and stuff like that, but not like that. So why did it just stop? And why?
Right around like, the time he stopped investigating. Stop?
I was just going to say, and why did it stop? Like, they obviously, him and Gray Barker obviously didn't stay there forever.
No.
The thing is, they didn't make it up. But why was it finite?
Like, well, and
why?
Especially, it's not
it
like,
make sense.
It's not like people within this community just abandoned this location. Like, this, it's known for this. Like, yeah. They have Mothman festivals there.
Yeah.
So if there were stories, they would be sharing them.
Yeah, and if Mothman loved fame and fortune, he would be there. Like, he'd show up for the festivals.
Yeah, it's a weird spot. I agree.
It's weird. Yeah. And maybe that's the appeal of it as well, because that is just something you can add to the pile, the mysteriousness of it. Mythos.
Yeah.
I don't know if I use that word right.
I guess with that, more questions will come or be answered, I guess, maybe in part 3 of this. So I do look forward to it, Chelsea. Maybe. I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea.
Spoiler alert.
We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.